Hi, I'm Dr. Sav Cohen-Hatton. I'm a neuroscientist specialising in animal and human learning mechanisms.
I'm Jamie Penrith. I specialise in canine predatory behaviour and I'm a former police dog handler.
And I'm Danny Wells. I'm a dog trainer that specialises in unwanted and dangerous behaviour.
Every week we sit down to talk about the latest research in canine science.
And even more importantly than that, how you can apply it to your own dogs to get to know them even better.
Welcome to the Dog Scholar.
Right, I have a question.
Go on, fire away, what we got?
Could your dog recognise your face? Mm. Not the rest of you.
Would just like
just your face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon so.
Yeah,
I reckon
so. Good. Without scent, without sound, just visually your face from a picture.
Well, they'd look disappointed. Yeah. I think I'd put my money on the fact they'd look disappointed if you showed it.
He's still alive. Yeah. We've all been on holiday and come back and seen the second our dog sees us, they get a little wag on. I think they recognise us, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But do you reckon they would do that even if you had like a balaclava on?
Well, no, I wouldn't recognise my face with a balaclava on.
What about a photograph of your face that's just on a stick that went like an old Vic Reeves gag that just went past the sort of like kennel to see if your dog genuinely did
Or give Jamie a mask of my face.
Yeah, see what happens. Yeah. See if
that'd be a risky game, especially with Logan.
You're all right.
I think we should do that. I think we should do that.
Interested to see what happened. Really.
Yeah, not with Logan.
We might have to do something about the height differentials. If you,
we're roughly the same height, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'd like to say it's taller. Because I'm like about 5 foot shorter than the rest of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kneel.
I'd have to sit on my ass to be sad.
Perfect.
But do that thing where you kneel in a pair of stilettos.
Yeah. You know, like on Halloween where you try and dress up as something stupid and you go down on your... Yeah. Or is that just me?
And what?
Anyway, no, never mind.
Welcome to the wonderful world of Dr. Sabrina.
It's nuts, but it's always fun. Well, look, you might wonder why on earth that matters. When is your dog actually going to need to pick out your face in a lineup? Well,
Sabby just wrapped my mind.
Well, I know. It wasn't him. It definitely wasn't him. Yeah. No. No, but I mean, it's not like they're sharing their holiday snaps with their doggy friends. It's like, this is mine. This one's mine. That human I'm not so fussed on, but they're always hanging around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You might wonder why they care. Well, it is an important question because faces convey a lot of information. They convey social information. They convey identity. They convey emotion, which is important for how dogs are going to communicate.
Because, and attraction.
And attraction.
Yep.
And attraction. Well, for some.
Yeah.
But it depends, doesn't it? Because they're looking at how you're intending to communicate, which gives them an idea of how to respond. So faces are actually super important. And dogs are incredible communicators. We know that across species with humans, they're great at reading our interactions. Now, it's so important that we've got a distinct part in our brain for processing faces. It's like a little face chip.
Unbelievable. I watched that. There's a documentary called Brain Games that talks to you how your brain tricks you into certain things and how it works and how it's evolved. And they said that our brains have evolved to actually make faces where faces don't even exist. And they've done this thing where...
clouds and stuff like
Jesus
that.
Toast.
Yeah. They've done this thing where... And the viewers at home, myself, I felt for it as well. They went like, so pick out these faces, such and such. And then they changed this colour and it was a head, but there wasn't a face there. Your brain had just put a face there because it assumed that there should be a face there. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Brain Games, it's on Netflix. It's brilliant. Yeah. There's like 24 episodes in each season and every one of them blows your brain. Yeah.
Not as brilliant as the Dog Scholar though. So do watch on and make sure you click and subscribe.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
But no, this piece of the brain allows us to recognise faces instantly, which is why you get that that instant recognition, as you describe. And we actually process faces in three distinct stages. The first one is your first order processing. So it's like a general organisation of the face. It's like, oh, yeah, two eyes, nose, mouth, face. Got it. And the next is a very holistic one. So you're processing the facial features that you're seeing and putting them into an image. So, you know, you're kind of like, okay, got those bits. Yep, it's a face. And then finally, you're analysing parts of the face and you're comparing that to other people you know. So you're looking at like the distance between the eyes, for example, and how big the forehead is. And you're comparing that to all of the other faces that you've got stored in your brain, which allows you to form an accurate representation of the face and to recognise it.
All I've got what going through my head when you say, when you talk, don't get me wrong, I'm listening. But what's
as soon as someone says that, they're not. If you have to say you're listening, you're definitely not.
It's like when someone says what with respect, through my head but.
Is I wonder how many miles away the nearest McDonald's is. No.
Yeah.
All I've got going through my head is that image from Terminator. When he walks into the bar to steal the bike and he's scanning. And it's like whether you're an enemy or a friend. And like when you're saying that, you know, it's a face, it's a features, and essentially that's what they may have had a neuroscientist working with Arnie. Who knows?
Indeed. Well, that's always been the case as we've known for.
A little Arnie noise there for you.
Is that what it was? Quite cute. I thought it was Yoda.
Yoda.
Yeah. No. Do it again.
I can't do it now.
Oh, I think
get down.
Oh yeah, that was definitely Arnie. Yeah. I got that one. But we've known that's the case in humans and in primates. But as for all other species, we just thought that they process faces like everything else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
when you think about it. You know, originally, 10 minutes ago, I'd have just thought, don't know, probably not. But now when I think about it and I think, well, of course you can recognise somebody's face. I would think, of course you can. You wouldn't even think about it if we were talking about people.
I mean, our arms are very different, but it would be quite difficult. I mean, other than Danny's tattoos, because you'd recognise them. But I mean, if you put, you know, five people's arms next scars. To each other. And the scars. Yeah. If you put five people's arms next to each other, you wouldn't go... Sam, Will.
No, you wouldn't.
Well, you might between me and Will because like.
I would if there was the three of us together.
I'm tiny, but that would be obvious. Yeah. One would be yours. One would be mine. Yeah.
If you had like 150 arms, you wouldn't think that one.
Hey, what a weird thing it would be if that particular part of your brain was damaged, and you were just walking around in a world where no faces were forming.
Well, that happens.
Does
actually.
It really? Yeah. Oh my God! What a weird world to live in.
Yeah, people can experience prosopagnosia when they can't recognise somebody's face.
Oh, that'd be a scary world to live in, wouldn't it?
It would be.
That'd be a disturbed world. How I couldn't even begin to picture what it would be.
Where would your trust go or anything like that? You know, you
really
would.
Tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, there's a brilliant book by a neurologist called Oliver Sacks called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. And he writes this lovely story in there. Well, it was lovely to read. It wouldn't have been lovely to be there. But this guy was in his consulting room and he literally thought his wife's face was a hat. He was trying to pick the hat up.
I still don't see the lovely
face.
Wait, what's lovely about the story?
It was well written.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So the
grammar was fantastic.
Amazing stuff. But in dogs, it was always assumed that with face recognition, it was based solely on associative mechanisms. So the dog has made a link between the face and a meaningful outcome, like getting fed. So it's like, oh, I know Jamie. Jamie's the dispenser of food.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the thinking, rather than it being a distinct face processing area.
Isn't all facial recognition some form of associative learning? I associate that this is my father and this is my mother. Is it not all like based around that?
You might have
associations.
I'm just trying to get a bit of clarity before we move on.
Well, you would have associations between those people, but recognizing the face specifically, we're processing it differently.
Okay.
Actually, we talked about prosopagnosia. Did you know that there are people who can't recognize animal faces either?
No.
Yeah. It's called animal face agnosia.
Or they've generally got ugly partners.
Look, it's easier to see in 3D than 2D, right? And there are human studies that compared how well people could recognise 3D and 2D faces. And it found that 3D provided much more accurate recognition. So we know that in 3D, stereoscopic effects were important. You know, that kind of effect that you have, you get richer information, you get greater depth, you get greater visual details, and it makes it easier to process. Now, most people assume dogs can see faces, but we need to ground whether they see them differently, even in 2D. So are they scanning and seeing? And it's really important not to assume.
Sab, most people, me, myself, and probably you included, would surmise that your dog recognises you anyway. What's the big deal? Can dogs like recognise faces without like the scent that goes with it, or the actual kind of functionality, the interaction? What's the science saying?
Well, it's a really good question, because that helps us to understand whether there is something happening in their brains that's different about faces, rather than, you know, kind of like recognising something as a whole. I found one study that looked at whether dogs could recognise faces in 2D as well as 3D. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's important because in 2D, one, we know it's not as detailed anyway. But also then there's not the kind of same things with smell and the sound of someone. So it's different. And, you know, you haven't got the image of their entire body there as well. It's literally just the features of the face. Now, in this one study, they had took 60 dogs and they separated the dogs from their owners. And they put them in a room, and to get back to their owners, they had to choose between one of two doors. And they put their owner's face above one door, a picture of their owner's face above one door, and they put a picture of a stranger's face above the other door. And they looked to, they left the dogs then to go and approach them to see which one they were going to go to. What they found was dogs, more often than not, could recognize their owner's face and would choose the door with their owner's face on it. And what they found was dogs, more often than not, could recognize their owner's photo. They would choose the one, really? The owner's photo. Yeah. And in fact, the male dogs were better. Interestingly. That. Yeah, I was surprised at that. To make sure that it was definitely the face, they did try a control condition as well, where the photo had really bad lighting and it was difficult to kind of recognize the face. It was difficult to discriminate, you know, like a really bad photo. You're like, oh, is that so-and-so? And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. Okay. With that one, but they did when it was a clear photograph of the owner. What this showed was that motion and 3D weren't necessary for the dogs to recognize the face. It was really interesting. And there was another study that I found that where dogs made socially appropriate responses to a life-size dog painting. So they'd spend more time sniffing specific body parts, for example, as if it was a real one. So the dogs were going to the groin and the tail and the ear of the painting. So, you know, there's definitely other examples of dogs recognizing things in 2D rather than 3D, but they could definitely recognize their owner's face in 2D.
I've got something funny to tell you.
Have you? Maybe
I've done this, but have you ever just witnessed your dog the first time in front of a mirror?
Yeah, Luther so wanted to fight himself.
Yeah, well, this is what I was going to get at. I think I've run my own study. I have Logan and Wade the Mallees. They live downstairs, but we let little Lenny the Terrier, me bully breed Ralph and Flint upstairs. And in my room, the whole wall is one big mirrored wardrobe, and well, the smaller wall. It's not a massive wall. And when Ralph's first seen his reflection, He braced up like he normally would, like a big bulldog. Who's this? Who's that? And then, like, went in, had a sniff, and picked off. So obviously, he's gone. Oh well, that's not a dog. It doesn't smell like a dog. Lenny walks past, looked at himself, jumped in the air, like, what the hell was that? And then started play bowing to it. Flint is the most aloof dog in the world, so it was all in line with their individual characteristics. Flint went like that, went. Just ignored it like nothing ever happened. Something. Yeah, like not like nothing happened. So my point was, you've just done it as well. The way our dogs naturally wear, the things that we've had to work through, that's how they react when they've seen their own reflection. Yeah.
I've got a couple of photographs of Sherlock on my social media, too, with the mirror. And it's just, you just think, you absolute self-loving, posing.
In
one of them, he sat on a chair. Took him to a hotel. I didn't take him to a hotel. It wasn't like a sneaky weekend that we had. I decided that he could see.
I take Luther away to hotel.
I decided that I'd let him see that beyond the confines of the box that I keep him in.
Yeah,
but, and then we're in the hotel, and he sat on the chair like, I'm getting ready to go out, whatever. I just took a picture of him, and he's just looking at himself, really sort of like.
And you do that with the head, don't you? Like
and
Jonas.
And then there's another one in my bedroom, and he's just. It's like you say, it's a length wardrobe mirror. And he's just like that, paws crossed, sort of like looking at himself. And I looked at him, he stayed there when I took the picture. I just thought, you posing little.
Yeah, I love
me like a French girl.
Yeah.
Do you know what I love this. When they're looking at themselves for a while, they do this, then they go.
Yeah.
Look in the air. They're funny.
Like a next catalogue.
Yeah.
Love it.
Paint me like one of your French girls.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
Hilarious.
It's great, but this study was fab. I mean, you know, facial emotions are really important ways that dogs cue their behaviour. You know, it's how they read us. It's how they know how to respond, you know. They could just do it visually.
I was going to add how amazing that is when you think that how we interact with each other, the complexity of how many facial expressions we're able to deliver.
Generally disappointment. Shame and disappointment. why haven't I got two bloody neuroscientists sat opposite me? It's probably so.
You
never did. The only time I ever get disappointed with you is when you leave.
Oh, well, that's nice enough.
There you go.
paper toys. So the complexities in how we deliver information through our expression is unbelievable. Dogs have a very basic level of that. So the fact that they can read the complexity of our information, know when you're he's a bit pissed off, you know, they're a bit happy. Do you know what I mean? It's quite phenomenal, really, isn't it?
Incredible. And again, their brains have evolved for them to succeed in human social groups.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just incredible that a species has evolved to be successful with us.
We are such
an integral part of dogs, their brain architecture, their development, their world. So special. And actually, it's a really privileged place for us. And I think that it's incumbent on us to make sure that they're set up to succeed in that world.
All that sophisticated frigging neurostructure going on. Mm. They're still shitting on your rug.
No, no. I trained mine. If you want any help in training your dog not to foul on your car, don't go to the least. I'm all about it.
That was just an anecdote. My dogs don't either.
I wonder then, when we go on holiday and leave our dogs in kennels, maybe we should give them photos or frame photos of ourselves.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to increase separation anxiety.
I might do that. I might do that. So when it doesn't move, when he's staring at it, he realises just how little I care for it. I put him in there for 6 months, twice a year.
I might put little photos up in the dog's crates.
Yeah, we'll see what you do.
Like the inside of a locker.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I think if
they'd all be of me,
just get chewed up.
Yeah, yeah. Anything in there with like anything of any high drive arousal, dogs getting chewed up.
Yeah.
At Halloween, do all of your dogs just stand in the supermarket staring at the pumpkin aisle?
I've got one. I've got a pumpkin.
She's got one too.
Yeah. So I've got a pumpkin. She said, "That's Andy. I've got a spud." Difference between the two of us is someone likes that one.
Yeah.
One's better in a pie.
Yeah. Sab, there's something clearly special going on with dogs and faces. But is there anything particularly special going on in their brains, or is it just down to their basic associative learning mechanisms? What's going on?
Now, if it was just a link with food, when a dog looks at your face, you'd expect to see areas in the brain lighting up that are linked with rewards rather than a kind of specific region associated with processing a face or how you process things that you see, even. One brain scanning study looked at this, and basically dogs were shown movie clips of either things like faces or other things like toys or objects or even scrambled objects. So it's just stuff to kind of process with faces whilst they were having their brain scanned. And they found activity in a specific part of the brain called the temporal cortex, which is on your right side of the brain. Now, this was a different place to the primary visual cortex, which is the bit where you're kind of processing things that you see. Now, if faces were processed in the same way that you process everything else you see, that's the bit that you'd expect to see activity in. But it wasn't. It was the temporal cortex that they found it in. So dogs don't just process faces like lines and shadows and every other visual input like they were with the other things that they were seeing. Rather, they're processing it as a distinct face in a separate part of the brain.
So what you're saying is the same parts of the brain are lighting up that would with people?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just like people. Now, previously, we only thought it was people and primates that could do that. This is the first evidence that it's dogs as well.
Wow.
You know, now, part of me thinks, okay, don't get too excited, which is pretty difficult because I always get excited about stuff like this. But, you know, it might be that other animals can do this as well. And we just, you know, we haven't put canaries in brain scanners yet, so we don't know. So,
we put them in headlamps.
Yeah.
poor old canaries. That wasn't a sort of like a choice decision. Sitting there, pal, and if you die, I'm coming out.
Yeah.
I know they were in them, weren't they? Candles that were on there.
Yeah, but you know, do you know what I mean? It could be other animals as well, and we just haven't run that science yet. But for me, the fact that dogs can do this as well, I just think, honestly, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
No matter what you're doing, I mean, it's something that we always say as dog trainers, but now obviously it's quantified, isn't it? Your dog is literally always reading you.
Yeah. I mean, it's no surprise, is it, that they are exemplary? I mean, it just shows, doesn't it, how socially intelligent dogs are and how they've got the kind of neural machinery in their brains to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been instrumental in that, haven't we? But by, you know, selectively breeding the ones that we want for specific tasks, yeah. but ultimately mm-hmm. to be companions in terms of not just companionship, but working with mm-hmm. with us and for us and stuff like that. So it would stand up, wouldn't it? That mm-hmm. it would make sense
yeah.
for the dog's brain to develop, or for the dog to develop skills to be able to,
yeah.
You know, recognize and to be able to communicate better. Otherwise, you know.
Yeah.
You're not going to be much use. You're not going to carry on, are you? We're not going to carry on with something that isn't fit for purpose. Yeah.
When you think how much emphasis we give to clients about being able to read your dog's cues, you've just added another 50% to your workload there, because now you've got to be aware that they're reading your cues more.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's, but you can see how much of an adaptive quality that would have been as they've evolved alongside us, like you say, Jamie, you know, that they are so sensitive to us. So sensitive. And now you can see why. Because they've got a specific bit of their brain to help them to process that.
Isn't it a pity that you couldn't go back in time, you know?
Be fun.
Yeah, not like to the Enchantment Under the Sea.
But not do anything. Do anything, because then you'll change the space-time continuum and change the history of the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Great Scott!
The last thing you would possibly want to do is have to find yourself hanging off a town hall clock, isn't it, to get back or anything like that. Anyway,
Martin, get the DeLorean.
What I like about neural architecture and brain development and things like that is it allows adults to listen to a very serious conversation, but have part of the head go off in a completely childish tangent to something that's got nothing to do with what you're talking about, but suddenly becomes the dominant thought in one's head.
Yeah.
I'd like to know the evolutionary advance. What I was going to say, in all seriousness, was if you could go back, it would be interesting to be able to run the same experiment with dogs 15 to 30,000 years ago, prior to them being selected, to be able to see, is this something that's actually developed alongside, relationships with humans, or did they have it?
Or run it even, with wolves.
I was just going to say, there is cases all over the world where people have raised wolf puppies and they're quite domesticated to them. Running that same thing with them would be very interesting, wouldn't it?
That'd be really good, actually.
I've seen one thing that wolves were better at problem solving than domestic dogs.
Might come up in a future episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Makes you wonder whether or not dogs have lost that ability.
Because we do things for them. If you don't use it, you lose it, kind of thing.
It'd be good to do it with wild dogs as well. I'm not sure that'd be particularly ethical, because you'd have to bring them in and train
and them. And the amount of actually, you know, wild dogs that will have been raised and domesticated, they'd be fewer. They're not as desirable as wolves, unfortunately. People like the fashion statement, don't they?
I wish humans were better at reading dog cues sometimes.
I don't, because I would be out of the job.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I wish more humans were better at reading dog cues, except for the specific amount that you need to be able to continue being solvent.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I wonder if dogs can recognise the faces of other dogs.
Yeah, I reckon so. But then again, scent is your primary thing, isn't it? You're probably, it's like, I knew you were coming before you arrived anyway.
I think with dogs specifically, it'd be more about individual odours, because, like, you know, if you get a litter of, like, black Labrador puppies, they're literally identical, aren't they? It would take some pretty, you know, I wouldn't be able to identify, I'll have that one turn around, but which one? Mm. Do you know what I mean? So I think dogs probably rely on other senses.
That'd be an interesting
thing. It really would.
If you took a bitch that had a litter of pups, and you took a photograph of one of the pups and you put it alongside photographs of pups that aren't hers, and see whether or not she gravitated towards her own one. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it, as well?
This is all this
research that we're throwing out here for free for people to think.
All you scientists, rub your hands together and go, oh, God. But make sure you credit us.
The hard bit.
Don't pretend you come up with the concept yourselves. We need credit.
I wonder if dogs have a preference for a particular kind of us. I wonder if they can appreciate beauty. I wonder if they go, oh, yeah.
Not mine.
That's,
no.
Ask him. That'll tell you.
Mine can appreciate a sarcastic comment, if that helps.
Do you know, like, you might have a type as a part, you know, you might think, oh, yeah, I find that kind of look particularly attractive. Yeah. I wonder if dogs have got the same. I wonder if dogs get the ick like
I
we
think,
do.
I think it's more demeanour with dogs. Like, a lot of the higher drive bitches we've got that train at the centre, they don't really gravitate towards anything but Logan. And Logan is by far the most assertive dog that is around, but they gravitate towards it. Like,
no, I mean humans. I wonder if they have a preference for a type of human face. I think they like,
whatever face
like
benefits
you.
Them. Yeah. If the face fits.
If the face is associated with a particular personality type.
Yeah, or past previously positive experience of any kind. Yeah.
I wonder if dogs get the ick from particular kinds of people as well. Well, we'll be right back after the break.
If faces are so important socially, is there any evidence to suggest that they're using them to read us?
It's a really good question, and I found some studies looking at this actually, because it's relevant. I mean, we've all had mopey moments, haven't we? And the dogs kind of come up and gone, oh, you know, and tried to give us a bit of a nuzzle.
Go away, you caused it.
Your fault.
Get back under the stairs.
In your box.
There is research that found that dogs can recognise emotions in humans as well. One study that I found presented dogs with pictures of human and dog faces, and they paired them with a voice sound either from that same person or from the dog that either matched the emotion or not. So it's like happy face, happy voice, or angry face, angry voice, or happy face, angry voice. So it was a mismatch, right? Now, they found that dogs looked much longer at the face that was matched appropriately with the emotion in the voice. So they recognised that, happy face matches the happy voice. That bit's right. That computes. So it was clear they could discriminate both visually and through sound. Mm. You know, so they could definitely recognise that. And recognising an emotion is a really important factor in maintaining a relationship, isn't it?
It is.
Because you understand then how that person is feeling and what the expected response from you is, or how you can help in that situation. So, you know, it's really crucial. And the fact, again, it blows my mind they can do this with humans.
On this particular subject, I'd like to ask for a little bit of audience participation, because when we were having the meeting about what subjects we were going to cover in this season, I said to you, didn't I, Sab, that I'm going to try this with all my dogs and see what happens. Now, despite what the research says, honest to God, if people would walk past my training centre, I've got every dog and I'm going, heel! Like trying to smile at them, and then I'm going, good boy, good boy, like this. My dogs did not change their behaviour towards me. They stayed giddy looking at me and they didn't change, but
they're really well trained.
They are really well trained. So if you've got just your average pet dog, let's have a bit of craziness on the go. Let's see you try this with your dog. Say happy commands with a frowny face, or I wouldn't advise you to scold your dog, really. No. Let's just stick with happy commands with a frowny face, and tag us in the Dog Scholar on all social media platforms, and let's see if your dogs play the game.
That'd be really good. Yeah.
Something that I think is really, really interesting from this as well, or a bigger question that comes from it, is if the dog is able to look at your face and match the face to the tone or to the emotion, surely doesn't that lead on to suggest that dogs possess emotional states that they're able to sort of like link the two together? If I have no concept of happiness, no concept of sadness, anger, no concepts of emotion, I wouldn't be able to do that, surely. So surely in order for me to be able to match your physical features with a sound associated with pleasure or anger, that must mean that I also possess the ability to have those emotions and to be able to
at least break them down.
Sort of rudimentary form. So I'm not some sort of like machine box type.
Aren't we all? Is that what all our brains are?
Or they might be linking that particular emotion that they recognise with an outcome that they've experienced as a result of that.
Yeah.
So it could be a purely associative mechanism after all. It could be that I'm linking that with that, but they just have a particular part of their brain dedicated to processing that quickly, because it's like a shortcut.
And we'll only have to just let enough time elapse and science to evolve to find out the answers. So tune in for season 146 of the Dog School.
love it. Well, now we know this stuff and there's some really interesting science around it, what can we do practically to help us now we have that knowledge?
Well, I think it's safe to say it's extremely important to have a face.
Invisible men don't have dogs.
Or women.
all women.
Yeah. Oh, there's a big problem with discrimination against invisible women, so we have to be careful there.
Is there a film or a book of the Invisible Woman?
I
guarantee there will be soon.
There is a book called
Invisible
Woman. No, there is a book called Invisible Women. I've read it. It's really good.
But if you're unfortunate enough to not have a face, don't feel like you can't have a dog. On a serious note, dogs are always reading you, aren't they? So, you know, again, just be mindful of the interactions you're having with your dog. It's very easy for human beings to displace emotions. So you might have been having, you know, a bit of a lover's tiff or had a bad day at work. Just remember how you're conducting yourself around your dog matters. They're always reading you.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Really helpful practical advice there. I'm very glad I have a face.
I'm grateful for my face. I mean, you make do with what you've got.
We're all grateful for your face, Danny. Should we have some listener questions?
Yeah, why not? Let's kick off with the questions. We've got a fantastic one here, which happens to be a bit of an ick of mine, this question. And the question is, my dog goes mad when he sees people wearing hats. I've no idea why. Is it possible that something happened in his past when someone in a hat, and he with someone in a hat, and he now recognises them? Now, if I can just say why this is a bit of an ick of mine. Obviously, we're going to answer the question. Thank you for sending the question in. For me, this is one of those things where a dog does something. So, and just as this happened here, beautiful example of it. That's a brilliant question in that sense. We automatically think that the dog is responding to a particular aspect of the environment. So in this case, it's the person wearing a hat. And then our natural response is to jump to something bad must have happened in the dog's past associated with hats. And you see it with tall men. Generally, this is a sort of like, it's almost like a fable that, mm-hmm. that has become embedded in dog owning culture of things that your dog may find, wary of or may find unpleasant or fearful. Tall men, men with hats, men with beards, men with umbrellas, you know, and all these sort of things that they sound like they came from some 1800s,
horror film.
Vision of, like urban England or sort of thing. But sometimes it could just be the person that the dog's responding to and they happen to be wearing a hat. Or it could be that we see the person wearing the hat and we think, my dog doesn't like people wearing hats. Yeah. He's going to kick off.
We get a bit tense.
He doesn't like them. Yeah, so we act differently, which, like we've discussed before, don't we, can transfer to the dog and say, oh, this is the signal for this behaviour. Towards the person with the hat. We don't know if there's any research on that because that isn't something that we've done.
I actually had a dog like this. So when I was rough sleeping, my dog Menace absolutely hated coppers. And then that generalised to anyone wearing a hat he got mad at. And I know exactly why it was. It's because at that time, frankly, whenever I'd have an experience with an officer, it was a negative one. They were moving us along. They were telling us not to sleep in that shop doorway.
Yeah, so everything was irate.
Everything, exchange. So yeah. He would anticipate an antagonistic interaction, mm-hmm. potentially. But then that generalised, and he hated anyone in a hat.
Most of the time, anyone then.
I don't doubt that singular learning events can happen, or multiple learning events where.
Oh, this was definitely multiple.
Where something is present and that triggers a response. I'm more with Jamie on that one in the sense that most people who come to me with these problems, it's not actually a problem; it's them given a cue. But I'm definitely. I don't rule out the possibility that it would trigger. Another thing that kind of icks me like that is the whole. This dog's aggressive. That dog's been abused and mistreated. That I've in over 10 years of professional dog training, I've never had a human aggressive dog come to me as a byproduct of being abused. They've always been mollycoddled and loved. Do you know what I mean? It's a misconception. We just naturally equate that to something, don't we?
Yeah, and I think part of being human is you want to find answers.
Answers if we have a question, but we have to label it as something, don't we? Have to understand
science, isn't it? You know, but the whole thing of like you say, I can't just accept that my dog barked at the person had a hat on. I have to think why, and then I have to come up with. I never saw my dog have a terrible experience with a person with a hat on. So the answer to your question is, it's impossible to say whether or not that the dog had a terrible experience with a person with a hat on. My personal experiences from. I'll give you an example. So I would be bending. In fact, I can see it in my mind's eye at the moment. Is I was bending down, stroking a person's dog who I was working with, who I just met, you know, to start the training session with. And the person said, that's unusual. And I said, why? And she said, because he normally hates men. And it was a sort of like, well, something's wrong. Either I've got some magical power that makes all dogs love me, or the belief that your dog hates all men is incorrect.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so somewhere along the line, I think it's beneficial to sort of test it and see, have different people come up to your dog with different hats on and or walk by your dog and see what your dog does. Have people approach you, have people walk past you, you know, have people come from behind and walk in front of you and see if your dog, A, responds to all people that are wearing hats, responds at all, or responds to people who are wearing hats only in certain situations, as in coming forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really interesting little, as long as you're safe, you know, as long as your dog's not liable to want to bite somebody, but a nice little interesting self-study that you can do to answer your own question. Give it a go. Okay, second question, nice and short and sweet. Is it true that dogs are colorblind?
No, they do struggle to see orange on a green background, don't they? Yeah.
That's a good one.
Big gun dog thing when you're a... You'd advance from dummies to end up orange dummies in the grass, so they're using their nose more.
Yeah. Well, their eyes are different to human eyes, so they certainly see colour differently to us. Yeah. There are two main types of cell in the eyes. You have rods and you have cones. Now, rods detect light levels and motions, and whereas cones differentiate between colours. Now, human eyes have cones that can differentiate between red, blue, and greens. We've got three types of cones, whereas dogs have only got two. So they can only discern blue and yellow.
Yeah.
So they see completely differently from that perspective, but it's not true to say they're completely colorblind. But whilst we might have more cones, dogs have more rods. So they're better at seeing in low light than us and better at identifying moving objects than us.
Very good. From a pet owner's perspective, you identify which colors they see. Think about that with young dogs that aren't necessarily skilled in their senses yet. You know, if you're throwing orange balls in the grass, they might struggle to find them and you might think there's something wrong, but that's completely fine. So choose colours more favourable to their genetics.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And likewise, if you throw in colours that the dog can see as a young dog and then they struggle to go out and try and find something or bring something back that's a colour that they can't see later on, just be aware of the fact that that may well be why it is.
Yeah. Jamie, how can I get in touch?
Okay, so if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so on social media at Dog Scholar Podcast. Or you can email podcast@thedogscholar.com.
And that's all we've got time for this week, I'm afraid. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please do share it with a friend, because if they don't like it, maybe their dogs will.
But we do have time for one tiny little bit more. Danny, what's your final thought?
Final thoughts, guys. So we've established that dogs can recognise faces and they can even discriminate between 2D and 3D. Amazing. So make sure you have a face and... And even more so, pay attention to what you're doing with that face.
See you next week.